For January the 9th, 2015, we talk about Minecraft Story Mode, The Legend of Zelda, A Link Between Worlds, and we ask you about your favorite educational games. Welcome to the 89th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Cole.
Oh, whoa. Sorry, it sounded like you said, Cole? I'm Cole.
And I'm Cole.
I'm not sure what just happened.
Yeah, there was a little lag there. I think Ben, I think the system wants you to be me.
Well, who am I to say no?
Can you say your name again? Sorry.
Yeah, I'm Ben Merkel.
Okay, cool. Sorry, I normally edit out the Skype, you know, glitches, which are numerous. But I'm going to keep that one in because that was uncanny.
What did it sound like?
It sounded like literally, it made you sound like you said, I'm Cole.
Yeah, ooh. That's what I heard.
So the Ben Mur got cut out and just the Cole remained?
Yeah, right. Yeah. It was a tactical Skype bloop.
See, I like to believe that all these questions, what's your name, Hey, Ben, can we end the show? Stuff like that. Is that actually Cole in the background calibrating a polygraph on each of us?
for the impending assimilation?
Yes.
Yeah. Protocol Duck 1.
Hey, he's got to know who he can trust.
Yeah. So we are now currently back in our respective cocoons, no longer forced to look each other in the eyes as we discuss things. Thankfully, nobody threatened bodily harm over the audio quality last week. I managed to doctor it up and make it sound all right, I think.
Mm-hmm. Wizardry.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got some plugins. It's cool. But yeah, thank you everybody who put up with that. I hope you enjoyed the episode. And also, because we did it after the actual recording, our little stream event worked really, really well.
Yeah, that was a ton of fun.
Major props to Murph Murphy for making me laugh the hardest that I've laughed in a long time.
Yep.
Man looks at his family.
He feels nothing.
He picks up the 45. It's light in his hands. I had to like look that up to make sure it wasn't some kind of like Raymond Chandler. Yeah, Raymond Chandler. That's the film noir guy, right?
So it was off the cuff. It wasn't quoting something.
No, it was not quoting something. I put the actual text of what he wrote. We should probably give some context. We decided to play Fibbage. Dennis was kind enough to fire up the Jackbox, which is a delightful series
guys,
of games.
Oh, guys, we used it again the next night, and it is so clutch.
Did you say clutch?
It is clutch.
Okay, mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Didn't we establish also that Dennis is the most bro out of all of
us?
Yeah,
I think
so
we did establish.
I feel like clutch is appropriate.
Clutch is in character. Bro? Yeah, I believe that there is some Venn diagram crossover between clutch and bro.
Okay, I'm going to own it.
Okay, cool. No, lean into it. That's fine. That's fine. You know, it's
let me go put on some shades.
I don't need to sanction it. No, at that point you say deal with it, then the shades automatically drop onto your face.
It was so much fun. I quite enjoyed my evening on both times that I played it.
Yeah. Did you play online with a bunch of other people when you did it the next night?
No, we actually were hosting people, so it was everyone in the room with a smartphone again.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's fantastic, and I really hope there's more of that in the future because they had some really good ideas, specifically with it's not draw something. What is it? Drawful? Drawsome?
Drawful.
Drawful.
Drawful and Fibbage. But we played with some members of the level community, Levalians. Yes, we played with some Levalians. And
Levalians.
Yes, and they were they were as witty and humorous as I think you expect us to be.
Yeah, proving that you guys should be doing the podcast, not us.
But we're the ones with the microphones.
As a side note, this aside still has not explained anything about your previous Murph quotes.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yes, there was a reason we were talking about this.
Yeah, no, just so instead of putting in like a fake Balderdash answer for his Fibbage entry, he just decided to put in some really dark prose that when something like a man looks at his family, he feels nothing. Then he picks up a 45. It's light in his hands. Then I believe the sound fury.
The screams
then nothing.
Are silent.
Yeah, the screams are silent.
It
or
is
something
over.
Like. Yeah. But it wasn't right next to each other. He waited a couple of turns in between them. Like, this is I feel like I'm describing a dream right now, like describing a dream or a D&D campaign. People are listening and thinking, what the fuck are these guys talking about?
We should do it again sometime. Not tonight, but we'll you know, I'm up for doing that again on multiple occasions because it was so much fun.
Yeah, we just need to find a way to get Ben in on it. That's the thing. I don't want to leave him out.
Twitch, hello.
Yeah. But it was fun having him in the room for the recording. So we'd have to like Skype him in, true. But he would be in on the delay. So we would be reacting to stuff ahead of time. Guys, I don't feel like working out the logistics here. I agree. We should probably do it again, especially now that we have the game. But
onward.
Yeah. But onward. We're back to the regular format here. We are in our respective homes and we are ready to talk about video games in the new year. So yeah, we're going to talk about some news. We're going to talk about, we got some multiplayer about edutainment games. The one that I was going to say was not brought up on the Facebook group. So I'm kind of excited to talk about
that. Exciting.
And then we're going to round out with a brief grind. Well, who knows how brief it's going to be where I'm going to talk about the game you guys didn't let me talk about last week.
Yeah. I think you have the floor for the grind.
Cool. Have you finished that beer, Dennis?
It's about 2/3 of the way gone.
Okay, the Palo Santo?
Oh, no, I haven't finished that. I've been savoring
okay.
that.
Okay, cool.
Speaking of which, I should be,
as you
I
probably should, be so- should have at the start.
Yeah, I should be sober enough to taste it when I drink the next bottle.
Yep. Cool. Go ahead, Ben.
Thank you very much for the stouts. I was able to drink them before I left Cincinnati, but the blackout was worth the wait. It was good.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. I thought about that like as I was like paying for it. It's like, I really hope he's not going to like home the next day. Yeah. And I've yet to hang up my gift from you, Dennis, but I just need to find a long enough nail to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. So let's go right into the brief, where we talk about things that are happening in the world around us as regards video games. Dennis, we're getting something over the wire. I see that it is coming from you. Can you tell us what the wire is saying from you?
Yeah, this is something that is, I actually haven't seen the wire, so I can't comment, but this
it's
is something that's
in
happening
the game.
In our world.
WeeBay. Man, gotta have a code.
listener, I think we can appropriately dub him Superfan for doing this. Nick has a couple extra amiibos for Wii U. And he's like, hey, I don't want these. Give them away. And so we're going to do that. So first off, thank you, Nick. You are awesome. And we totally owe you because this is completely rad. We're going to give them away in the form of a contest. And first off, the amiibos that we have available are Captain Falcon, Pit, Diddy Kong, and Luigi. And all of those are up for grabs. All you have to do is submit a haiku to our Facebook page, and I'll put up a post for it. A haiku to our Facebook page that incorporates an episode title. It can be any episode title. It could be more than one episode title if you like. But it has to be a haiku, and it has to incorporate at least one episode title from the level. And we'll do some complete. I would say each of the hosts will pick their favorite or something like that.
Yeah.
And then those will be the winners.
Yeah. So how about this? You are getting this on Friday, Thursday, if you are a Patreon backer. So you have a little bit of an edge. Let's call the deadline Monday, the 12th of January. That way we have time to look at these, judge them, and pick our favorites, and we can announce them during the next episode. Dennis, does that sound okay to you?
Sounds great to me. And thank you again to Nick. That counts as my brief. So amiibos, Captain Falcon, Pit, Diddy Kong, and Luigi, all up for grabs. Haiku, episode title, get on it.
Cool. I'm going to take us in with a story.
Sure.
Cool. So this is one that that just popped up here today. Weird numbers about mobile devs and piracy. So Monument Valley, an amazing game, one of the best mobile games to come out last year. Fantastic to play, just came out on Android, which means more of our listeners can play it. Totally recommend it and its expansion pack. However, some shocking numbers from the developer saying that only 5% of Android installs were legitimate.
Holy crap.
I know, right?
That's pretty surprising.
Yeah, that's really surprising.
So that number can be a little bit misguided because some of that is let's say, people redownloading their stuff, or if there was some kind of like free, you know, install kind of thing. But if you compare that kind of like to similar numbers, 40% of installs on iOS were paid.
So even then, that's surprising.
Which
now 40% were paid, meaning do they do things like, hey, it's free for a day to bump us to the top of the App Store?
No. Like I believe based on the article that I'm reading that 40% were revenue generating downloads. Yeah. So that is fucking crazy. And I'm looking at that and I'm saying it's actually kind of a miracle that we have the number of good mobile games that we have. You know, that, you know, so the piracy numbers, which I knew was bad, but I didn't know was that bad, combined with just the awful state of just search engine and discoverability on iOS and Google Play, especially with, you know, clone games and stuff like that in general. Why in the world would somebody make a game for iOS that wasn't like a service, that wasn't a free to play thing? Go ahead, Ben.
Because programming is fun.
True, because making things is fun and you should do it. But man, oh man, something like Monument Valley, it deserves every penny it gets. And turns out, approximately, in the best case, 60% more of the pennies that it gets. Like, I don't know, that just like depresses me in a really fundamental way.
Well, so
how much does it?
It's like a $4 game, which is premium, and that's pretty sad. Go ahead, Ben. Sorry, you're glitching out a little bit.
No, that's fine. I would like to get some more like legitimate numbers on it, because if they're counting like reinstalls as part of that, that seems a little bit biased, you know.
It does seem to skew it like definitely towards the low side, but 5%,
certainly low.
Yeah, that that's the one that's like way more alarming. And so, anytime you see this will make me sound like a partisan, but like again, why would somebody make a mobile game if this is all that's going to happen to them? I don't know what the actual piracy rate is on games that are not mobile, so that is a weird statement to make. But why would somebody port their game to Android if that's all that's waiting for them? I don't know. Yeah. Like it is markedly dismal.
How
people
for anyone
make
with
decisions on the margin?
I suppose people do, but when the decision is either pay somebody for the work they make or commit a crime.
Oh no! I meant rather 5% profit is still profit.
Maybe. How much work does it take to port?
Going back to your previous question, why would people ever port it? Because 5% profit is still profit. Apparently was not clear.
Yeah, I don't.
I was trying to say.
I don't know that that's profit. Who knows? So 5%. So let's assume that they are selling 100,000 copies of this, which I don't know. I don't know if that's what that is. So that means that 5,000 of them would be legitimate if they were selling it at $399, which is what I think that is. That's $19,950. Dollars of revenue, which at Apple's rate of charge, right? So they're going to take 30% out of that. That's $13,965 of revenue, you know, just on top, you know, like just there. I have no idea what kind of overhead was introduced in that. I don't know if it cost them $13,000 or $14,000 to port that, but that seems well within the realm of possibility for what it would cost to take something from Objective-C over to whatever crazy moon language Android is run on.
Wait. We're calling Objective-C not a crazy moon language?
Sorry, is everybody laughing at me now?
Yeah.
Okay.
I laughed at a joke I didn't understand.
I thought about Objective-C as the de facto app development language for so long that it's hard for me to see something else. I don't know. No. Like, I really don't know.
Most Android apps are Java, which is like what everyone knows.
Yeah.
So cool. Are you saying you can't see something else objectively?
Yes, that is exactly what I'm saying, because we are all subjective beings who experience the world from our own particular window.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah. So that's my story. I guess the moral is go buy Monument Valley, because these people deserve every penny they can get. And just, I don't know, Maybe if you hear somebody talking about pirating something, talk to them about it. I don't know.
Just send him that Batman meme where he's backhanding Robin. That'll show him.
I'm not aware of that meme.
Or just say, wait until it gets on Humble Bundle. There's no downside. Or just buy it. Either way.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to be a grouch. I didn't mean to take us immediately to downtown, but there we go.
Give people money for their shit. Please, people.
Yeah. especially since pirating stuff on iOS or I believe Android requires rooting and jailbreaking.
I can't
not on Android.
Okay.
Android's open source.
Yeah, I have no idea. I've heard stories of people having to root or do whatever in order to get like the alternate stores, right?
If you want from a store, you probably have to do something about it, but you can just go to a website and download crap.
Yeah, and to me, all that sounds like is open source means you don't have to pay for anything that's on here. Viva la Revolution, Ron Paul 2016.
true open source, that kind of is what that means, because you can just recompile anything. Yeah. But I mean rather that the operating system's open source. It's not a walled garden.
Okay, cool. It's not a walled garden, which means that nobody will get paid for the things they make. Sorry, I actually really think that that is a problem.
It's either a walled garden or it's a grazing pasture.
Yeah, a gleaning pasture is what it is.
Sure.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get as impassioned about that as I did.
No apologies, no regrets.
Yeah. Who wants to go next? David.
I'm not sure that's quite how that works. So just something real brief for the brief. Apparently, Minecraft company is
Mojang.
Partnering with Telltale to make Minecraft story.
Minecraft story mode.
Minecraft story mode.
Yes, this is a story we missed last week just because of our...
Oh, was this old?
It's about like a week old. It happened over the holidays.
5 pages of like my top 10 games for 2010, so I very well could be like back in like November by now.
Of 2010?
No, 2010. Wow.
Sorry.
20 last year.
Yep. 2000 and late.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
A thing.
That's the thing. Also, there's in this particular article, there's a blurb that apparently they're considering a Minecraft movie. So
that's
nothing more to say about that other than that's a thing that exists and you should be scared.
That's actually been in the works for a while. A Minecraft movie has.
I don't understand why.
Because people will go see it.
Yeah.
Really?
When Telltale announced this and people were like, wait a minute, what? There was a tweet that, you know, they tweeted something out, a picture saying, this is why we think that this is valuable. And it was a picture of an end cap at Barnes & Noble that was like all Minecraft books, which apparently like, and I've been in a Barnes & Noble since then and I saw this very same end cap display. It's like 1,000-page books about how to play Minecraft, how to make stuff in Minecraft, and bizarrely enough, what appears to be Minecraft fan fiction. And in, you know, talking with people at work whose kids play a lot of Minecraft, just kind of like asking them, like, how into this are they? Like, you know, like, are they treating this like a narrative thing? Because, you know, there's, you know, this is the way that I get information about the way real people and real kids actually act. yes, like they really are like intrigued by the lore of this. So I'm at this point, I'm pretty content to say that this is not for us. This is for 13-year-olds.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
You know, even though I really like Minecraft a lot and had a lot of fun with it, you know, between the years of 2010 and 2012.
He picks up the diamond pickaxe. It feels light in his hands.
Can that be a title? Will that actually... Okay.
Good stuff.
Yep. So I don't know what they're gonna do with it. I really wish that Telltale would make something I care about, actually.
Again, yeah.
What's the verdict on Tales from the Borderlands?
The reviews for it have been excellent.
I've heard really good stuff. There was a great, not write-up, a great talk-up about it on Polygon's Quality Control, actually saying it does a very good job with a different way of telling that story than we've seen in either Walking Dead or Wolf Among Us.
Yeah, I would almost say, like, you know, if they did a Dark Souls Telltale, there's no way it could be good because we're just too close to it.
Yeah.
Like, it would just, it's we'd see all the flaws. Mm-hmm. We'd know all the ways in which it could have done better but didn't. Like, it's just, we're too close to it to really be able to enjoy it. Whereas I feel like if they go with a Borderlands or a Minecraft, mm-hmm. like, it's one of those things where it's, we don't care enough about it to be hung up on the details. So maybe those, in fact, are the perfect games for them to be doing.
Yeah, I didn't give a shit about The Walking Dead until I played the game, and then I just did as deep of a dive as you possibly can into that by reading all the comics and watching all the television show. Like, it introduced me to something crazy, which is why I'm excited about the Game of Thrones one, even though the first episode didn't get a very good review. Like, that can be a good entree. Not entree. Is that the right word? That's a dish, right? Yeah.
Entree could conceivably be a rational word choice there. On.
Like, it could be a good entrance, a good introduction to kind of like, for lack of a better word, a new IP, right? Like, that's how it functioned for Walking Dead. That's how I imagine it's going to function when I actually sit down to play The Wolf Among Us. Like, they do good stuff. In reality, the only Telltale games that I've had any affinity for ahead of time have been the Strong Bad ones and the Sam and Max ones.
What about Poker Night?
That's different. I have affinity for those, but that is not explicitly a storytelling kind of thing.
Right? It's like a character study, not a story.
Yeah. Well, like, when I say Telltale games, I mean they're specific. I don't mean games Telltale has made. I mean games in the style of Telltale games.
It's not the thing that I said. It's the thing that I mean.
Keep up, Ben. Come on. Read a book. Yeah. No. It's weird. But I guess the way that I think about this, I never thought a Lego movie could be possible and or good, but they totally did it, and it was actually one of the best movies I saw last year. So...
keep an open mind, I guess.
I guess. I don't know. I'll wait until all of it drops to $12. Yep. Wait for a couple of episodes and then just pick it up on the cheap. Play it, enjoy it, talk about it. Learn, grow, live, love, laugh. What do you guys think? I feel like I hijacked that. Ben.
I was going to say eat, love, pray, but I'll say my brief instead because it's kind of a segue from 5 minutes ago. So speaking of like the Minecraft movie, they also announced another video game movie this week, the Assassin's Creed movie.
Yeah.
They gave a release date of December 2016, and Michael Fassbender is supposedly going to star in it. Hmm. So that's it.
See, I feel like I don't see that ending well.
How so? Because the target's Kim Jong-un?
Wait, what?
It's a play on
that was
Assassin.
Good. I like that, yeah.
Topical. It's like a Leno monologue. Fuck me.
You're better than that, Cole.
I don't want to be here anymore. I'm sorry, guys. Go ahead, David.
See, I feel like the... I don't know. I feel like the constant in video game movies is like arbitrary pandering. And I feel like the way I would see an Assassin's Creed movie working is if they just said, yo, fuck this making any sense. This is just going to be 90 minutes of nonstop parkour and kung-fuing people and stabbing.
Like The Raid, kind of?
Yes.
Yeah.
But yes, cool. Like the greatest movie ever made.
They're not going to do that, though. But
oh, yeah. But
at least Michael Fassbender's in it.
Yeah, I like Michael Fassbender.
Good acting, yeah.
There's some really good, you know, crazy conspiracy theory type of stuff going on in Assassin's Creed. I could see it being interesting.
Yeah. I mean, historical epics almost never work. But I don't know. That's almost what it would have to be, because 90% of the time it is a period piece.
See, I feel like there are ways you could make it good. Like, I would love it if it was a historical epic that was like, we're going to straight up make a period, like, action movie. That would be kind of entertaining. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I feel like they'd have to do something weird, and they're not.
Yeah, like, I would feel much better about this if Assassin's Creed wasn't the current poster child for oversaturated AAA title.
Right, exactly. Like,
I mean, I used to have a lot of goodwill towards that series back during the Ezio trilogy or whatever, but nowadays, I don't know, it feels like they've squandered that. So, like, any charity I would extend to it, probably not gonna, you know,
it's probably dried
right
up.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have they said a specific incarnation of Assassin's Creed?
I don't think so. I think they just announced the release date.
They just renounced it. They canceled it.
They renounced it.
Yeah. Well, that's crazy too, because like, is Fassbender going to play both the present day person? Is he going to be the Desmond? And the animus person or what? Like, that
will be a real The Parent Trap situation.
They just double him.
I feel like why would you not simply, like, Nolan North's been in a couple movies, have Nolan North as Desmond, and that would entertain me.
Has Nolan North actually appeared on screen outside of a documentary?
Yes. I think he has several times.
Huh. I'm not willing to turn
his IMDb.
I'm not willing to turn this episode into The Level Browses IMDb. But, but I will take your word for it, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. Like, this kind of seems like the BioShock movie. It's going to dry up here in like 18 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were going to do a BioShock movie?
Oh yeah. Like,
I did not know this.
It was essentially so the treatment that I read was essentially just Romancing the Stone with the exact same cast as Romancing the Stone.
See,
oh,
I
oh wait, no, that was the Uncharted
gave
movie.
Up on the BioShock movie when Atlas Shrugged came out.
Mm, yeah, I'm thinking of the Uncharted movie. No, the BioShock movie was going to be directed by Gore Verbinski. Actually. Ooh. Yeah.
Okay.
So that was probably going to be just horrifying garbage. Yeah. Like David said, let's put it in the hands of the people who did the Atlas Shrugged movies, which my favorite thing. I need to see if Atlas Shrugged Part 3 came out, because part of the contract for that was that Atlas Shrugged Part 3 must have the full unabridged version of John Galt's speech, which when read aloud is actually 2 hours long.
Oh.
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Compelling film.
Yeah. So just turn it into like Objectivist Koya and a Scotsy. It's like reversal film footage. Like time lapses and shit of tribal peoples in the fucking Yucatan. Sorry. Koya and a Scotsy shrugged. I think that the brief is done, you guys.
kill it.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for multiplayer, where we ask you some questions and you respond with what we assume are thoughtful answers. Dennis, what did you ask our audience this week?
Yeah, I tried to make it, you know, a bit of a avant-garde statement that educational games are the Tobias Fünke of video gaming.
I didn't get that.
It's just, you know, awkward, always a step behind and kind of off.
Always.
I thought it was good.
Making innuendos.
Never any nudity.
Yeah.
Never any. Well, yeah. Well, there are some educational games, I'm sure, that have some nudity in them. But those are at the other CES show right now.
Yeah.
Or the other big show in Vegas right now. Anyway. Apparently, I'm just ahead of my time on that.
That is a weird joke about the way that CES is always scheduled alongside the Adult Video Awards,
like the Cyber Porn Awards.
Yeah, yeah, they always share the same venue.
That just seems like that makes sense.
Yeah,
I guess. Anyway, I thought that was good. Apparently it wasn't. What are some of the most memorable educational games you've played, for better or for worse? Also, what Arrested Development character would you compare educational games to?
No, I wasn't putting you on blast. I was just asking you to explain yourself.
No, I was disappointed no one else commented on that or tried to interpret it.
Oh, I didn't even know who it was.
Yeah, no. It's all good.
Yeah.
I'll say Buster.
It's all good.
Yeah, Buster. Yeah, Buster's pretty good.
That's a pretty good one as well.
Yeah. So I'm going to fire off with the one that we got on email. It's pretty brief here. This is Graham who writes in saying, some people might not consider it to be a true educational game, but as far as I'm concerned, my love and interest in history started when I played the original, Age of Empires. I learned about the Carthaginians, Hittites, Sumerians, Babylonians, Marians, Palmyrians, and many more ancient cultures through Age of Empires. Granted, some of those cultures I learned from user-made custom campaigns, but that's a tangent for another time. Yeah. I think that's valid. If it introduces you to the fact that these different cultures existed, and it led you to pursue more information about them, despite the fact that probably most of those never developed trebuchets, and that is the way that combat happens in Age of Empires. You know, Gandhi never waged war, but civilization tells me that he will kick your shit in every time. Yeah.
He will freaking passively resist you so hard you will die.
He'll passively resist you right into the fucking ground. Gandhi, two ones.
They have to be passive if they're dead.
The piece of death. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see how accurate to actual timelines any of the tech trees are.
Well, I mean, the fact that you can just pursue a tech tree that means that you have archers when other people have tanks is a little bit weird.
Yeah. Hey, I've seen Star Wars Return of the Jedi. Hmm.
The fact that the archers can win sometimes does not make sense. But no. Again, Return of the Jedi.
Oh man, Ben, what does David say?
David says the Carmen Sandiego games were a pretty solid staple for me. I went from the kids version to Where in the World to Where in Time as I got older. Each step up would be followed by a brief period of mass failure before I started winning. Each game only had so many clues, so you would start seeing repeats eventually, but as a kid, being able to remember that was pretty satisfying. Cool.
Yeah, could you ever actually catch Carmen Sandiego in those games?
Yeah.
Well, that answers that question.
I remember catching her. Yeah. Those are really effective because I thought that I was going to the library and just like getting one over on the system by playing video games. You know, not realizing like, oh, these dummies, they made this really easy game about like which city is where and shit. I didn't realize it was educational.
Yeah, they got me.
I was watching the television game show version featuring Rockapella.
Oh my god, Rockapella.
Hey, 90s kids, unite.
Listen up, gumshoes.
Yep, just thinking like yeah, and then like playing Trivial Pursuit with my parents, like, yeah, this is totally just a stupid game, like I'm steamrolling people, what up?
Like, see, can I just throw this out there, though? I don't get the point of geography in general. Like, as
wait a minute, David, you don't get the point of knowing where shit is in relation
generally,
to
other no. shit. It does not seem like an actually useful skill. If I hear about a place on the news, I look it up.
Man, knowing arithmetic is so passé when we all have calculators on our phone.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, people use arithmetic every day. How often do you have to like navigate by map and compass or whatever would be useful?
I don't, like,
from
internal map every day.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, I've never had it come up. Like, I'm very, very bad at geography, and I've never had it even come up.
Sure.
I don't know. Yeah, I just like I just think it's interesting is the thing. So like I have a
I think it's a great thing
to know. I don't
think it's useless.
Yeah, you just believe that everybody who knows anything about it is wasting their time.
It's more I don't understand why in school they put such a big emphasis on it, I guess is what I'm saying.
It's one of those weird things. We have spell check, so why force anybody to take spelling tests? We have Google Maps, so why force anybody to know where Canada is on a map?
As in the words of Alanis Morissette, you ought to know.
Yeah, because to expecting people to hold any amount of information in their brains is possibly like a good expectation to have.
See, but I still feel like you can't make the comparison to like spelling, something people use every day, to compared to geography, which if you have the basics down. Other than that, you never use it. Most people never use it ever.
Right. But that train of thought, I think, leads to some of those startling statistics, which is, you know, we can't actually pinpoint on a map where we're at war right now.
Mm-hmm.
Would it help you if you could?
I mean,
it would be good to be cognizant of other countries in the world.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, I would categorize that under, like, if something's routinely in the news, you should figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying more like...
I don't know if that's a good
barometer.
News tends to be pretty shitty. But I do think
I'm saying, like, for example, I probably couldn't have picked out... Well, I maybe could have, but like Iraq, stuff like that before the war, and I don't think that was a problem. I mean, if I couldn't figure it out now, that would be kind of questionable.
There's a scene from Sherlock where he doesn't know that the Earth revolves around the sun that is like exactly this conversation.
Yes.
It's not relevant to my day-to-day life. Therefore it's not. Wow. I'm gonna let you stand on that statement, David. I will let you inhabit that reality.
I will do that, and someday I will crash on a desert island and be unable to find my way back, like, and have to live
you realize
the rest
we're not,
of my life like in Chukala, Siberia, Stan.
You realize we're not asking you to know, like to know what a fucking sextant is or how to use it, right? Like just basically just like, they're asking me to go to Copenhagen. Where is that? I don't know. Is that where all that snuff is? Go ahead.
Maybe geography would be a lot better if it had field trips associated with it. So it's like, we should learn about Belgium. Let's go to Belgium, you know?
Yeah.
That'd so, guys, Rockapella has like a 3-page entry on Wikipedia.
It's pretty nuts, isn't it?
In which they refer to the post-Carmen Sandiego years as the new Rockapella, in which the group has added more choreography and energy to their concert performance.
There's like a whole table of all of the different members and like what years they were active.
I mean, look, it's very simple, right? You are either a Scott Leonard guy or you're a Sean Altman guy, and there is no in between.
No, I mean, you can see the collective merits of both, but push comes to shove, you have to take a side. David, what does Earl say? I don't believe Earl has commented before, and if he has, I'm very sorry. And if he hasn't, welcome to the fold, Earl.
And either way, was that... Since we're doing 90s stuff, get it?
Ugh, man, that was... I feel gross
Moving
about that.
Moving on! Earl says, I loved playing Number Munchers in the computer lab at my elementary school. I loved it so much that I saved up money to buy my own copy. But the best I could do was a 2-pack containing Math Munchers and Word Munchers, which looked nicer but lost some of the charm. Did you guys play it?
Yeah.
Oh, I've never heard of Number Munchers.
Yeah. Had it on either the Apple IIs or the DOS machines.
See, I remember some sort of number something game where you're some sort of like spaceman going around saving things. Is that at all related to Number Munchers?
I believe you're referring to Math Blaster.
Okay.
Which we did.
Yeah, I played Math Blaster.
David and I went to elementary school together so we can corroborate each other's stories. Yeah.
Paul won't even need his lie detector for this.
I believe you're referring to Math Blaster, which was the more badass game because it did involve space.
And blasters.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, those are really good.
If there was Geography Blaster,
yeah, it was called fucking Oregon Trail. Yeah, like you blew those buffaloes away and you couldn't take all of it back.
That was Colon Blaster.
Ooh,
what?
For the dysentery.
Okay,
I am like over six tonight.
Sorry.
I think the one legitimate thing I learned from Oregon Trail is
salt your meat.
I was gonna say
never Calkin Ford.
Game conservation.
Oh yeah.
Huh.
Like that is the one thing that has stuck with me.
God, I wish there was I'm gonna say this and then like people are gonna correct me. I wish there was an effective recreation of Oregon Trail for modern systems. I would play that.
That was almost a brief because there was just an article that I saw that there's a bunch of those games, including Oregon Trail, that are now playable in your web browser.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. Like a shitload of DOS games are now emulatable.
Yes.
Mikkel Christensen replies to this, which is, it's weird that Facebook just slipped this feature under us. Because
do we want to read replies? Because lower down, they get into like conversations back and forth between people.
I'm just going to do this one because it brings up Oregon Trail. Mikhail says, I definitely would sneak into the computer lab in fifth grade to play Number Munchers and Oregon Trail. I remember being very disappointed because around the time that I got old enough to appreciate Oregon Trail, we had like Windows 95 machines in the classroom, and they wanted to put in the CD-ROM games, and they switched to Amazon Trail, which is decidedly inferior.
Oh yeah,
see,
I played Amazon Trail.
I would actually contest that. Some of the later Amazon Trail games were actually really good.
It's an FMV game, yeah. So
I mean, so it could be really good or really bad. I hated the first person rafting sections.
Oh yeah,
those were legitimately not good.
Yeah,
I know. My favorite of the series was Yukon Trail.
I wasn't aware of that, actually.
Yeah, you're basically, like, traveling up from... You start, say, like, in San Francisco or somewhere, and you travel up to the Alaskan Gold Rush.
Oh.
I vaguely remember playing that.
Yeah.
Because you got there, and then there was, like, a panning minigame that was just kind of the end game.
Yeah, yeah. And it was kind of weird, because it was... Yeah, you went for ways and then you get to like cities and have to make various decisions. So like, do you hire a that word?
Yep. Syrup.
Thank you.
Nailed it.
Or do you not, I guess?
Yeah.
Seems like I was going somewhere with that.
That's pretty cool. Dennis, I'm going to ask kind of a personal question. You being homeschooled a little bit, how did you get exposed to these? Because most of this was, like for me, was either through the computer lab at school or through the library.
Yeah, I don't think we ever actually... No, this is a fun story. I taught myself algebra when I was really young. I don't want to pin an exact age to it. But basically, there were games that were on floppy disks. So whatever year that was, I was that young.
you were floppy there was young.
There was one that was just kind of like an adding game, and I figured that one out. And then there was another where you had to like plot places on a graph to like shoot down asteroids.
Oh, that's badass.
And it was like it got into like X and Y and you know, solving for variables. I was nowhere near that in homeschool, but I wanted to play the game, so I figured it out. So
nice.
I guess that figures in somehow.
Yeah, well, but that's a success story.
Yeah.
I feel like that's one of those games where you do that, and then if you're in an 80s movie, the government knocks on your door and tells you you're the only hope to save the Earth.
Yes.
Ender.
Dennis, you may in fact be the last starfighter.
Yeah. That's good. But I also was within biking distance of the library and would just be there pretty much every day during some weeks. And, you know, I'd get games out from there, fledgling video game collection, which was actually mostly educational games. So,
yeah, the library taught me that Persia apparently only had one prince and he sucked at jumping. Dennis, what's Brian say?
Brian says, does Pajama Sam count? Probably not. Those games own, though. And I think that totally counts in the same vein as Spy Fox. And Putt-Putt was a little young for me, but Spy Fox and Pajama Sam were awesome.
Yeah. I think that's more in the vein of like kid-themed wholesome entertainment. But I won't take it away from you, though. You probably learned some life lessons, such as not to be afraid of the dark.
Or how to play Go Fish with a pirate.
Yeah.
Wait, wait. Are we adding life lessons into here? Because then then definitely World of Warcraft. I've learned so much about humanity and why never to trust it from World of Warcraft.
Go outside. was the lesson. Daniel writes in on Facebook saying, Typing of the Dead, while not an educational game, was really good for learning to type fast and well. The House of the Dead 2 version was particularly geared towards teaching typing with a ton of mini-games and bosses that had particular parameters that had to be followed in order to succeed.
I've never played those games.
They're great.
I think I've seen Let's Play style thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you really ought to play it because it teaches you how dumb your stupid meat fingers are. So David or Ben, have you played it at all?
Nope.
No?
I have not. I kind of want to. I like typing.
Yeah. So. It's weird how natural it comes, given how hard it was for me to learn.
Did you take typing in high school?
No. I guess so. By the time high school came around, I spent enough time on IM to know how to do it. But I remember using like educational typing programs in like first grade to learn what the home row was.
Hmm.
Yeah, so
that's early.
I know, first grade? Right? Yeah, first grade. Yeah. It was the highlight of my week was going down there because if you got through the lessons fast enough, which I did, you were able to play Pac-Man on the Apple IIs.
Which I did.
Yep. Definitely. I'm going to throw in on mine as well. Lemonade stand, you guys.
Oh, holy shit. Yeah.
Yeah. I would call that like a really, really good educational game, specifically for teaching you about supply, demand, and profit margin and stuff. And for
sometimes life just fucks you over.
Yep. Like sometime it gon' rain. And so, like,
sometimes life gives you lemons.
Ooh. And then that day you can't make a lemonade stand and you're like, dang it.
Yeah. Similar to that, Drug Wars, actually,
yeah.
for the TI-83. Like, I love those little economic simulators. And, you know, just I think that gives me an appreciation for like more like sim heavy games and survival kind of stuff. Like any time where you're trying to like maximize in the face of these other factors you can't control. Like, those were both really, and like Lemonade Stand is really simple and it's older than time, but like it is always carrying through. And that was like a foundational thing for me once I figured out like, oh, like this needs to work. So I need to sell this thing for more than I spend on it. Right. Yeah.
It's also just like, hey, surprise, we tricked you into making a budget.
Yep. Which like, you know, I've said it. There are only three objects you need in this world, a shotgun, a Bible, and a compass. There are only classes you need to, only three classes you need to take, public speaking, statistics, and personal finance.
Huh.
You know, it's.
I don't believe the first one. I kind of halfway believe the second one.
I don't know how I feel about statistics.
I just said the statistics are a way for people to mislead you. So it is a way to instill skepticism in the world.
Yeah, that's what you need to learn, is that virtually no one knows how to do statistics right.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm talking like people know how to do statistics right.
And by saying that, Ben, you know how to do statistics right. Yeah.
I'm trying to keep this from being reminiscent about our childhood.
I think it's there. Why don't you wait until we get around to yours?
Okay, this was actually a game, but that's fine.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I've gone. Ben, why don't you say what Russell said?
Russell says, as a child, I got my mom to rent me the NES game Mario is Missing from Blockbuster. It was so terrible, I felt ashamed. I had spent my parents' money on it, so I hid it under the couch until it was time to return it. Bummer, man. Sorry.
Yeah. And Tim responds.
Pro tip here. If you start Googling to find out what this game is, be a little careful, because apparently one of Google's biggest hits for this is Mario is Missing, the sexual adventure.
Oh, God.
Is he in this pipe?
While Mario's away, Luigi will play.
And speaking of which, Mario's Missing was the first game to feature Luigi as the main character.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Mario's Missing is the Mario version of Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego. And that was another game that I played. My cousins had it, and that was a large impetus for me realizing, oh, shit, I don't know how to read. So at the tender age of 15, I decided to buckle down. No, I remember having a lot of fun with it when I was very little, actually. Tim writes back, responding here. Whoa, I have a similar story, but mine ends with me taking it back to the rental store and taking it, and talking them into giving me another game. Yeah,
nice.
I would have to go back to it and see if it's actually that bad. Like, it's just trying to do a different thing. And Dennis, the image you chose for this was Mario teaches typing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
wait, so in this image, actually, is he teaching that turtle how to type? Because that's what it looks like he's doing.
Yeah, it's a very existential, inquisitive turtle. He just keeps asking why.
It also spells try backwards.
Mm.
And I think he's about to murder the turtle.
Because he's shaking his fist at it.
No, he's definitely pointing.
Mario's on Twitter calling everybody tryhards. I will never ever understand that insult.
What the heck is that? Because I actually stumbled upon that today in something completely unrelated and couldn't understand why that was an insult.
Yeah.
Or it's coolness. You care about things. You have to try.
Yeah, as somebody who prides himself on actually trying and making an effort in life, it's actually really insulting that that's an insult.
Yeah,
I didn't. Yeah, it confused me.
I don't know.
I think you're going to read Tim's response.
Oh, I just did.
Oh, no, you just did, yes.
Yeah,
okay.
So I'm actually going to throw it off to David. What does Franz say?
Franz says, it's not a video game, but Magic the Gathering seriously helped my math skills. On the video game front, Planescape Torment and Spycraft. Anyone remember that game? Very educational for my English vocabulary.
Yeah, it's like Cassandra from Wayne's World learning English from the Police Academy movies.
there was an actual article on NPR where this guy has done this in multiple places, multiple countries, where he'll go to kind of an impoverished area that doesn't really have internet connection, you know, no one speaks English, and he'll just leave a computer with an English keyboard somewhere that kids can get to it. And without fail, like, he'll come back in 3 months and the kids have taught themselves English to be able to just mess around on the computer.
Yeah, it's a powerful force.
Wait, is this like the pitch for the Gods Must Be Crazy 3?
No, this is an actual thing. Like,
yeah,
just the desire to explore is enough for them to teach themselves a language.
When I think about my own journey to literacy at the tender age of 15, I would have my mom and my grandma read me Sonic the Hedgehog manuals because I couldn't read them myself. And like that was a big part of the desire for like, oh, there is written information in this world that I want access to. If I don't want to just be a lazy bum who relies on other people, I'd better learn to do this myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I can totally see that being the case.
Yeah, that's actually something I never thought of. That's actually kind of a cool thing.
Yeah. Ben, how about you? Did you have an educational game that you...
Frog Fractions.
Learning about, it's a little bit of a lemonade stand situation. Ben, did you learn how much pornography to make because of Frog Fractions?
Yes, tons. You don't stop making it.
Yeah. Can't stop, won't stop. Did you have a serious answer?
Nope.
Okay, cool.
That was my serious answer.
So how about you, David? Did you have a particularly salient?
Sure. Well, I wanted to honorable mention Treasure Mountain, that whole series, just because they're awesome. But I think mine, in the third grade, they had, do you remember those, what they're called? They're like the cross-section series of books?
No.
Where they'd have, like, this one was like a medieval castle, and there are these series of picture books where they'd show you, like, the cross section of the castle, and so you could see in all the rooms and stuff like that. And they made this video game of it where basically you were like a spy trying to infiltrate the castle. And in order to like blend in, you had to, you know, take on these roles of various people in medieval life and, you know, act the part and stuff like that. And, you know, there's some trivia stuff. And I don't know, that was like, that was the game that everyone wanted to play when they should have, you know, been learning how to spell or whatever in the third grade.
Huh.
You are a serf. Press spacebar to be oppressed.
Yeah. Man, this game is nothing but pressing S to harvest sorghum. Yeah. No, I have no recollection of that.
I know. Do you... Who did you have for third grade?
Okay. Let's take this down to Stingle Elementary School inside baseball. I had Mrs. Nottingham.
Okay.
And we ended up playing a lot of Fury 3 specifically.
Yes, I remember that.
Yep.
No, I had Mr. Pettit for that was kind of my lemonade stand. Was he had Pettit Bucks, where, you know, you could do various things, earn these you know, like fake money. And periodically, he would have sales where you could buy, like, candy and stuff. But you could also, like, form, like, basically companies and, like, bring in, you know, like, old things you had or toys and stuff and, like, sell them to students and stuff like that. And so me and a whole bunch of the other students ended up setting up this, like, vast, like, communistic system of handling all this, and predictably it all collapsed. So that was kind of my lemonade stand, you know, first introduction to economics.
You established a cartel.
Yes, basically.
Yeah.
Was your third grade class Mr. Pettit's money laundering service?
Yeah. he was specifically trying to. He was running an angle on Toys for Tots. It was a reverse Toys for Guns scam. He was trying to arm a Central American resistance movement.
Oh,
I have nothing
gosh.
But affection for the man. He seemed like a nice dude, and his dad taught me how to drive. So, yeah, yep. little bit of Mansfield, Ohio, inside baseball there. The Pettit dynasty ran strong. Dennis, why don't you tell us what Noah says?
Noah says the Super Solvers series was the best. Playing as a dude with a cap pulled over his face, you thwart Morty, the master of mischief, Maxwell, using superior knowledge of grade school level reading and arithmetic. Did anyone else run into these games?
No.
I've never heard of that before.
I'm sorry, wait, did you read that as a cap pulled over his face?
Cap.
Okay.
I might have not alliterated very well. Or not alliterate, enunciated. although there was a lot of alliteration in there. Honorable mention goes to Quirky and Quasu. Those are not real words. Quasu's Turbo Science by Sierra. You play a pair of space persons competing in a race where the more science questions you get right, the better conveyance your team can buy to reach the finish line. Pro tip, never choose walking unless you have a good chunk of real time to kill.
That reminds me. I need to put in another one there. The piracy protection for Leisure Suit Larry actually was a big one for me because it was a bunch of history questions specifically relating to politics and current events from the 60s, 50s, 60s, and 70s.
You're kidding.
Why do you call it piracy protection?
I have no idea. Like that's what it functioned as. If you didn't answer these questions, you weren't able to play the game. It might have been actually a way to verify somebody's age, which like if you couldn't answer like who was Nixon's vice president, you didn't get to, you know, play as a dude who was, you know, going out there trying to be a poon hound.
the weird era between having computers and having Google.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like just being flummoxed, but then like, oh, I know this one actually. So it wasn't like an impetus to learn something more, but it was incentive to know, you know, like the answers to these questions.
And that's why Cole always wins when we play the You Don't Know Jack games.
We never actually played it last time. I didn't get a chance to drop my science on y'all.
Grind us into dust.
I don't know about grinding you into dust. Yeah, we can probably do like a four player with you, Jen, me, and David, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That rounds out nicely.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ben.
Sorry. Sorry. Did somebody else have something to say about Quarky and Quasu?
I'm pretty sure it's made up.
Quasu?
Yeah.
I demand proof, which I could Google, but I demand instead.
Okay. How about you, Dennis? Did you have one that you held dear when you were but a young, growing boy?
It's actually about to come up, so I'm going to read Nick's answer. Mm-hmm. Again, awesome, Nick. Reminder, get on that Amiibo competition. Mavis Beacon taught me to type and stole my heart.
Yeah.
Aw. Yeah, Mavis Beacon teaches typing is the main thing that I did in grade school for typing. And there was like a weird driving thing.
Yep.
That I had to do that sticks out in my mind. But yeah, I spent a lot of time with that game. And still to this day, it failed to teach me how to actually look at the screen while I type. I have to look at the keyboard.
Oh. And
I would just brute force it to succeed in the game. Like, you know, do the look up and look down really quick thing. But yeah, that's the main one for me. I had Mario teaches typing for a little bit, but mostly Mavis.
Oh, so you actually
so is
had
it weird? I learned not to look at the screen when you type.
Don't know.
That actually does run counter to what most people tell you to do.
Well, like when I did it, the way you did it was it was you look at whatever you're like transcribing.
Oh yeah, I suppose that makes sense. Like you would have to do that.
Sure.
Yeah.
What were you asking, Cole?
No, like it was, so it's bizarre to me that you actually had experience with Mario teaches typing, because that has always been an urban legend for me.
Oh no, it was over in some lady's house. So we'd go over to another homeschooling lady's house, and she ran like quote unquote classes with it, where it was just like computers in her basement or something, but it was a big event every
week.
That
sounds shady as hell, Dennis.
It was shady as hell looking back. But I could never get past the water levels for some reason. Mm. It was out of my league. This was before Mavis came along and stole my heart and taught me how to type.
Huh. That's pretty good. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Typing is a valuable skill that, like, I think that, like, we take it for granted because we learned it, but also everybody younger than us takes it for granted because they've never known not computers.
Mm. Yeah. Spend any time trying to have your parents type something in and... You'll understand.
Yeah. Yeah. 90s kids understand. Phil writes in saying, I liked Mario's Missing and Mario's Time Machine when I was younger. Looking back, I want to go back in time and ask, why? on the other hand, Oregon Trail, Number Muncher, and the Carmen Sandiego games were incredibly well made and still hold up.
This Number Muncher is apparently like really good.
Yeah.
I've never heard of it.
People dig on it.
Hmm.
Yeah. Ben, what does Jeffrey say?
Jeffrey says, grew up on a Mac, so some of my favorite memories of gaming were there. In addition to the humongous games?
Yeah.
I don't know what those are. All right, Putt-Putt, Freddy Fish, etc. There were Super Munchers. It's the same thing as Math Munchers. You were a frog that fit in a given category while avoiding monsters, and there were silly little cutscenes between levels. I don't really learn the actual meaning of words so much as what buckets they fit into, but it was fun. And
it
anyway,
still makes typing weird to this day.
And anyway, wasn't the point of the educational video games to trick our parents into thinking we were learning while we were really playing games? We'll let them keep thinking it was the other way around.
Yeah. Guys, if they catch wind of this, we are all fucked.
I just like that we've discovered Frog Fractions, the prequel.
Yep. God. Yeah, so the developer of Frog Fractions, I believe his name is Dave, he is now a constant fixture on Video Games Hot Dog. He is delightful.
Oh, cool.
Yep. Yeah, so, you know what? Just listen to Video Games Hot Dog. Fuck. Like, why are you...
Like, why are you wasting your time here?
No, no. I was going to say, in addition to this, because they are all really cool guys and they deserve your listens. Let us see here. Dennis.
I think I got Jala. Yeah, Jala says in text instead of in person. I'm sure she'll be back on the show before too long. Mm-hmm. Number Munchers and Carmen Sandiego, because I also played them during elementary school computer lab. All also include Oregon Trail and Odell Lake, where you play as a fish.
Wow, that's a new one.
Yeah, I've never heard of that one before. Apparently you're a fish.
Hmm. It teaches you about fishy things.
It stirred a memory, though. There was another game that we were allowed to play in the math lab, other than the lemonade stand, which was Lunar Lander.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think was supposed to teach you about, like, force and vectors and stuff, but really it was, like, more just mashing arrow keys. So
so this was, like, Kerbal Space Program version, you know, negative 2.0.
That was an Atari arcade game, actually. I remember playing it a lot. So every time I would go visit my grandparents in Columbia, South Carolina, they would take us to the Columbia Science Museum because they were awesome, mm-hmm. you know, were and are awesome. And they had in the, you know, the air and space section, a stand-up cabinet of Lunar Lander. And every time I would go back, I would get just a little bit better.
Huh, that's cool.
It is a good game. It's really, really fun. Also, you have to play it on a vector screen or else it loses the effect.
Yes.
Yeah. Hmm. David, what does Mikhail say?
Mikhail says, I spent a lot of time around the age of 10 playing the Incredible Machine. Mm. That's a great one. That's
an image. Snap. Yeah.
Yep. And Oregon Trail. There was also this game-ish program that more or less entailed making something like terrible PowerPoint presentations. Lots of unnecessary animated objects, garish textures, annoying sounds, that sort of things. This was all in school in the mid-90s, when a lot of our teachers just sort of assumed that we were learning, as long as we were using a computer. Instead, we were probably just adding new animated Simpsons GIFs to our GeoCities websites, or playing Battleship on Yahoo Legends. As for present-day educational games, I would heartily recommend Sokoban, which is a nifty, minimalistic puzzler that teaches the player about chemical bonds.
Hmm.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Probably more educational than Space Chem.
Yes.
Which is a fantastic puzzle game, but teaches you nothing about chemistry. Yeah. Man, the Incredible Machine.
Yeah, man, that was... I want to go back and play it now.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Good.
I don't think I'm familiar with it. What is it?
It's like a puzzle game where you have like access to different simple machines or, you know, like really goofy kind of things. Like, oh, there's a whoopee cushion. But what that effectively does is if there's force applied to it from the top, it applies force outward to the sides. And so you kind of build these Rube Goldberg contraptions.
That was the word.
Yeah.
I was thinking RuPaul, but that's something different.
I think you're referring... That'd be some kind of like weird drag racing game.
Drag racing game, yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Who can put on their makeup the fastest?
I remember in elementary school, the computers had a like a knockoff version of the Incredible Machine called Gizmos and Gadgets. Which every time I would talk to my dad about it, because, you know, I was, you know, really enthusiastic about games, he would call it Gizmos and Gonads. So I would say, oh, man, in Gizmos and Gadgets, we did blah, blah, blah. He was like, Gizmos and Gonads, that's a terrible game. Kids shouldn't be playing that. And I'm like, Dad, I'm 10. Let's see here. Rounding things out for this delightful little educational game segment. Christopher Schley writes in saying, spiritual warfare taught me how to deck heathen sinners with various fruits. Other than that, I'll go with the already mentioned Carbon San Diego. And also the Oregon Trail, I suppose, since that was a staple in my elementary school, as it was for everyone else around-ish my age, that taught me how many laughs one could have when your buddies died of various diseases that don't really exist anymore. Yeah.
It's like watching Deadwood.
Oh, Swear Engine, will you ever learn? That's a name from that show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You caught me.
Yeah. This is stirring all kinds of memories. So there was, you know, I did like vacation Bible school in summers. And there was one that you had to like sign up for what quote unquote classes you wanted. And I was so angry because I was locked out of the video games class because it filled up too fast. And it was literally like spiritual warfare. There was like a Joshua game. There was like, there's a bunch of them.
Oh,
from,
yeah.
Like the old days. But it was like all those that you just got to play for an hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would have been a good class. That would have provided a lot of fodder here. I call that Flanders wear.
Yeah.
Man, thank you so much, everybody, for writing in on that. I hesitate to move us along, but I know we've been here for a while, and I want to go to sleep sometime tonight. So this was a great question, Dennis.
Thank you. I was surprised by how popular it was.
Yeah. So, and, you know, thank you to the listeners. You all have been coming out in force over the past, like several months, actually. So, this is great and heartening. And if you are listening and you would like to participate in these, we are on Facebook at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Dennis puts up these questions on Tuesday afternoons and you can respond and we, read those as the opportunities present themselves.
That's also where you will be able to find the contest for the Amiibos.
Yes, so look for that. Look for that right there, and we will deliberate that in the next episode.
Cool.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing recently. So I'm going to lead us off because I so valiantly sacrificed my turn last week so we could start the streaming event on time. Not that I'm angry.
Make up for lost time.
Yeah. Also, I'll lead with this because I haven't really played much else because I've spent most of the time in the hospital with family since last week. So not a lot to talk about aside from my winter break Christmas time. I don't want to talk with my family about racial issues game, which was The Legend of Zelda, A Link Between Worlds.
Oh yeah, much more fun than racial issues.
I know, right? An actual quote, and I know that my grandma doesn't mind me saying this. At some point when she was kind of delirious, you know, just from being incredibly sick as she was, and she's fine now. And thank you everybody for your kind words as all of this has proceeded. She questioning how I became so liberal and let's just say liberal. She asked out of her mind, how did Cole get like that? Which, taken out of that context, could be answered in many different ways, referring to whatever that is. How did Cole get like that?
Yeah.
I don't really know. So I beat A Link Between Worlds over Christmas break as I was laying in bed sick to my stomach like crazy because literally everybody is sick. Holy shit. Yeah. It is a really, really good game. It is the last Zelda game I have completed, the most recent Zelda game I've completed since, say, Majora's Mask. Never played Wind Waker.
Wow.
Never beat Twilight Princess, never beat Skyward Sword, never played any of the portable ones. So, like, this is kind of an anomaly if you consider the last 15 years of Zelda games.
Huh.
Yeah, and it's great. So it's a little bit of it's an older game, so I feel weird describing what it is, but this is kind of a direct sequel to A Link to the Past, and the gimmick is that you are given the ability to turn into a painting on walls that can kind of like move along those walls in 3D space. So like, say you are on like the second floor of a dungeon, you can just attach to the wall there. And that, you know, makes use of the fact that, that this is a 3D game and, turns the game into an effectively 3D experience, even though, you know, it is a top down Zelda game, you know, like the ones that I really, really enjoy.
That's cool.
It's fantastic because it kind of breaks the Zelda rhythm. It's not so much you go to a dungeon and you know that since this is the first dungeon, you're either going to get the boomerang or the bow and arrow. And it replaces that kind of like, you know, predictable order of operations by actually having you be able to rent equipment from this merchant kind of guy. So you can equip yourself with different stuff for dungeons, depending on how you want to play. Right. And you can buy it for a higher price so that you don't lose it when you die, which is the normal downside to renting this stuff. So, you know, there's
just like in real life.
Yeah, exactly. Right. you know, if you own property, you can hand it down. Yeah. To your next self, I guess, that revives, something like that. But it's great. And it brings back kind of this overworld, underworld kind of thing where you have Hyrule and Lowrule, which is similar to the Dark. Yeah, that's what they call it. And it uses that wall grabbing kind of mechanic to get you back and forth. The majority of the dungeons are in Lowrule, which is kind of this fractured land that roughly maps to what the overworld is. And so getting to these new areas involves finding inventive ways to get to new like fissures that happen in the overworld map in Hyrule in order to get down to the proper area in Lowrule. And so what it is both intensely familiar and also like refreshingly innovative in a way that Zelda kind of hasn't been, especially in the 3D era. It is really cool to like dive into a Zelda dungeon that really engages me in a way that, again, like I said, reminds me of what it used to be and tells me like, oh, there are kind of like new ideas that can be expressed like this. And it's weird because there are not like new items. You still have like, oh, here's a hook shot. Here's a hammer. Here's all these old things. But, this pinning to a wall as a painting is the way that it really shakes things up. It makes you think about the space in a different way.
Does that have any combat application?
Not until like the final battles and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to ask how long it took you to get through a dungeon. Like how?
2 hours. So that is a really long time. I'm terrible at estimating time. probably closer.
Is it easy to play in a limited time sitting?
Yeah.
It's cool.
Like in an evening, you know, of like dedicated, I don't have to do anything play, I could get through maybe like 2 dungeons.
How many dungeons are there, I guess?
10.
Okay.
Yeah. 10 and then the final one. Yeah.
Nice.
It's great. I mean, this is the one that's for the 3DS, and it is a fantastic case for like why you should own a 3DS. Mm-hmm. Like it is a fantastic game, and like it has kind of made me fall in love with Zelda again. Like I really want to go back and see some of the stuff that is kind of like more recent and just kind of figure out if my distaste for it just has to do with poor presentation or poor pacing in terms of like showing you anything new or, you know, getting you to the stuff that kind of scratches that itch around what a Zelda dungeon can feel like.
Yeah, it's kind of defied the Sonic arc where, you know, it's the games have stayed good over time in a way that I think, you know, pretty much only Nintendo games have managed to do.
I don't really know.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is it seems like Nintendo's consistent about that.
But I think that consistency is kind of like a real downside, though, because you could argue that, you know, 3D Zeldas had kind of stagnated around this kind of rhythm that they established.
Yeah, I guess. Not, and again, stagnation is not the same thing as being like a bad game.
True. But boredom will get you to stop playing a game regardless, probably. And boredom is definitely subjective, and everybody kind of has their own threshold. And I say this, you know, hopefully with a measure of sensitivity, because I know that, Ben, you really, really love Twilight Princess.
Yep.
Yeah. So I will admit that I probably haven't given that game its due. And I'm, you know, more curious than ever to kind of go back and see if, you know, that resistance that I encountered probably, let's say, a third to a half way through it is justified or not.
See, I feel like the metric I would use is there's still Zelda games coming out, not all of them, but there still are Zelda games coming out that people care about and relevant, if that makes sense.
It doesn't. Can you go on?
Well, I guess I feel like, you know, like, for example, you know, like, everyone cared about, say, you know, the original Zelda. You know, everyone cared about, the SNES one, Ocarina of Time. Unfortunately, very few people cared about Majora's Mask, although it was apparently very good. You know, things like that.
I love Majora's Mask.
What?
I really loved Majora's Mask, and
I'm
excited about
saying,
the
like,
3D
in
remake.
Terms of like Zelda games, like there still seem to be people that would consider like say like Twilight Princess as a noteworthy entry in the series, whereas say like Mario, I can't say that I've heard anyone really, you know, any of the Mario games really having much staying power, being much particularly relevant since like the SNES era.
Really,
where
like
not,
between...
not that they're not good games, but they're not games that people care about in the same way. Maybe that's I don't know.
How are you defining relevant in
this
situation?
That seems to be a misguided appraisal, because between Galaxy, New Super Mario Brothers, and 3D World, like they've gotten talked up a lot, and people have really said like this is the like these are reasons to own systems.
Okay, it just doesn't seem like I ever hear any dialogue about them.
Telltale Mario.
It seems like the games that come out, people play them a lot and really enjoy them, and maybe they're the reason to buy the system, and then people never speak of them again.
So I'm sure you're a doctor, but why are you not married?
I think what you're getting at is the fact that like there's not kind of content to them. You know, there's not like a strong narrative or, you know, something unique about it, like there might be in like The Last of Us, you know?
Right. And I think because of that, it seems like they're just
they
don't have any real
focused.
Yeah.
I think.
Right. And they don't have it seems like they don't have the same relevant, you know, staying power within the series, relevance within the series.
I can't not speak in douchebagisms, so I'm just going to use a douchebagism to say this. Like, none of them have innovated in a way that moved the needle, in a way that people really, like, stop and take notice of and say, like, holy shit, this has changed things that are going to come after it.
Right. Yeah, and I guess that's kind of...
Really? Because I think Super Mario 3D World is pretty much that.
I would agree.
Which one are we talking about?
Super Mario, the one that was in the big castle, was 3D on the N64?
Oh, you're talking about Super Mario 64. Like,
would say, like, I love that game. It seems, and maybe this is just the people I hear from, it seems like most people I hear from tend to think it was a fairly poor game, although I loved it.
Yeah, like, I you know, people tend to be split on it just in terms of, like, I don't like this popular thing, or like N64 3D platformers were not bad. You cannot argue that Super Mario 64 didn't change the way that 3D platformers were made, though. Like, I would say that, like, that was probably like one of the last big ways that Mario really changed the industry. Like, all you have to do is look at like Bubsy 3D and Crash Bandicoot versus everything that came out after, you know, Super Mario 64 proved successful.
Yeah.
Cool. I don't know. But yeah, this is heartening, and like it has kind of renewed my faith retroactively in the Zelda series a little bit. which is like a crazy stupid thing to say, because I've already tried Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword and put, you know, tens of hours into them and not saw fit to see them through to completion. But like I've got this enthusiasm for like the action RPG. As corroborated by how quickly I went through 3D Dot Game Heroes, but as squelched by, I really don't like Brave Fencer Musashi so far. So who knows how this is all going to shake out in the end.
One day you'll stand before God and answer for whether or not you liked Zelda as a franchise.
I guess.
As a side note, I'm so glad that I finally understood that you said fencer. I thought that all this time you've been saying brave hamster.
It's brave fencer film Musashi body massage.
I presume it's from Japan, so either is just as likely.
Yep.
Oh yeah, I could totally see a you know, classic Japanese sword fighting hamster game.
Get on it, game devs.
Yeah. So I can't recommend A Link Between Worlds enough. It is a truly fantastic and delightful game, and it will remind you like why you loved Zelda before, if you ever stopped loving Zelda since.
Cool.
Which I cannot assume is true. But I haven't played anything since then. Who wants to go next?
So that's all you played?
Yep.
Cool.
I'm going to ask you, Ben, to go.
All right. I wasn't able to play a whole lot since I was on vacation last week in Cincinnati and visiting friends. But one game I did get to play was Mario Kart 8 for the Wii U. Hmm. And it was pretty cool. You know, you go upside down and stuff. It's fun. Have any of you guys played that one yet?
No, unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah. So I was kind of thinking of this when we were talking about Nintendo games. But yeah, I mean, they kind of consistently make solid games. So, yeah, I mean, not only are the levels kind of interesting and unique and pretty looking, there's a lot of, like, cool mechanics that they added. One thing that's just kind of cool, it's a small thing, but, like, at the end of every race, they show, like, instant replays of the of fun events that happen throughout the race, or I guess, you know.
That's kind of cool.
But like so I wouldn't really think I would have said this about a Nintendo game, but the graphics look really good, you know, and like they, yeah, I mean, it's just a very pretty, pretty game. I think
in
they
like
have
a Pixar way.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it. It's like, even though it has a cartoon aesthetic, the graphics look good. Like, it, you know, like looks detailed and rich and yeah. So similar to Pixar.
By the way, you asked that question, Dennis, I can't tell if you like Pixar or not.
The inflection of my voice implied that was negative, and I did not mean it that way.
Okay.
Like a Pixar game.
Yeah.
Okay. go ahead, Ben.
So yeah, I think there's maybe 8 or 10 different cups that you can play right now, and I think they're having different pre's be downloadable content afterwards. But some of the cooler maps that I played, there was one F-Zero map that was pretty fun. So there's a whole lot of boosting. There was an Excitebike map.
Man.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun too. There's like oil slicks you have to avoid. Yeah.
This is Mario Kart, right?
Correct.
Wait, so has Mario Kart become like Super Smash Bros?
At Super Smash Race.
Yeah, pretty much. they're leaning real hard on nostalgia in some of the courses. Yeah. But
I'm not opposed to this.
Yeah, that actually is a pretty cool idea.
They do have like so they also have past courses too. So they have like Rainbow Road for SNES, and I think it's split up where it's like half the races are kind of like new maps, and the other half are all retro maps. But then even the retro ones have a little bit of a facelift to them. So,
dude, DLC could be Pod Racer.
That was actually a pretty fun game.
Oh, that was a great game. It was the only thing good that came out of that movie.
Ooh, another childhood story. So I got that game from the library. Like, I got a lot of games from the library. We'd actually bought a new computer that finally had a video card that could play it. So it had been around for a while, but I didn't have a computer that could play it. Got right up to the end. My rental period was ending, or checkout period. And I had gotten like some kind of sickness. I think it was like poison ivy or something like that. But my mom didn't want me touching the keyboard or the controller, so I didn't spread anything to other people.
Right.
And so I worked out a system where I would wear like rubber dishwashing gloves so I could finish the game before I had to return it.
Dedication.
And did you?
I did. Got Sabuba good.
Yeah.
While we're tangenting, I will say that the Obi-Wan Kenobi Star Wars something game was also a really good game.
Oh, you mean the Yoda's Desktop Adventures?
it was like it was the it was an Xbox One. You were Obi-Wan Kenobi the entire game, and it followed like the plot before and during Episode One. But it's basically the controls were what made the game. Like you can control the lightsaber and which way he swings it, and then you have different force powers.
Yeah, it was Star Wars Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
Yeah, exactly. Because you could chop everything in half. It was great.
Yeah,
yeah.
Star Wars Obi-Wan, that was like a launch title. Or pretty close to it. It was like an Xbox One exclusive.
Yeah, and it ends with a fake Ewan McGregor voice quoting Trainspotting, but in the context of Star Wars.
That's fucking nuts, Ben.
I choose to be a Jedi. Yeah, whatever.
Wow.
So, Mario Kart. Anyway.
So did you play this like local co-op? Not co-op, local multiplayer with a bunch of people like you did with Smash?
Yep, probably only limited to about maybe four people at most at a time, but yeah.
Nice.
It was pretty fun.
Yeah, I can understand what you mean about like how cool it is to see Nintendo characters in high def.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, just to see like their design will kind of like stand up and has, you know, stood up ever since, you know, times low res or whatever, but like whatever loving detail they can put into it like just seems to fit. And it speaks to how strong those kind of speak to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so it was fun. It's definitely making a hard sell for the Wii U. The Wii U is starting to look like a pretty nice system.
Yeah.
Because like the main controller for it is pretty awesome. The giant controller with a screen on it. I don't know.
The gamepad. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah. It just seems like a cool system.
Yeah. It's been tempting to pick it up, A, because of Mario Kart, A, because I love Mario Kart with all my goddamn heart, and B, because of Bayonetta, because apparently those are the definitive versions of that game, and I would really like to give that another shot.
Yeah, I have also heard strong recommendations for Bayonetta as well. I think, did we talk about it last week?
No, we it was did. Just Smash Brothers. I mean...
Okay. Because do we talk about Nintendo being the ones to fund Bayonetta 2?
No, not specifically last week. I think it's come up on the show before, but
okay. All right. Yeah. Anyway, the other game I played is I played a little bit more of Smash Brothers for the Wii U as well.
Yeah.
Also in the same context, just playing with friends. But I guess the only difference is I had the upper hand since I had played it a week or two ago, so dominated with little Mac.
Is that your character of choice?
Well, it seems like a lot of the new characters are pretty overpowered.
Okay.
Little Mac is especially fun to punch people with. So, yeah.
Because for people who aren't aware, you definitely are a serious Smash Brothers player. Like in the past, like you've played it not so much competitively, but, you know, like with the aim to win. Yeah, like you've played a lot.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
He doesn't so much play the game as he plays the person. He's at that level.
Yeah.
That's cool. I mean, have you taken to this new character pretty well? Like, have you learned his vagaries and such?
Well, like, you know, I'm not spiking people off the map or anything, but right. I mean, as far as playing in a party game, yeah, I mean, he's pretty good. I don't know. I don't think, I mean, since I don't have the system, I don't plan on like mastering this game or anything, but it's definitely fun to play. So if you have friends and you have a Wii U, get on it.
But it's really tempting. Like, that's if I buy another console, the Wii U's probably going to be it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, just...
And they have pro controllers, too, which they're basically the same controllers as Xbox or PlayStation.
Yeah.
So.
Except, weirdly, it puts the buttons in a weird spot. Like, I don't like that the... Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little weird, but, you know.
Yeah. It puts the face buttons below the right analog stick, which is bizarre to me.
Definitely breaks up the flow. Yeah.
Doesn't the Vita do something like that, or am I thinking it's
Dennis?
Or they?
What does it do?
Doesn't the Vita put the face button somewhere kind of odd, or am I thinking it's something else?
No.
You might be thinking of something else.
All right.
Anyway, I'll pick up Dragon Age next week, but until then, that's all I've been playing.
Nice.
Yeah.
David, how about you?
Sure. I picked up the Stanley Parable for real cheap on Steam.
So
another game that you can't talk about without spoiling.
Which I kind of resent, because I feel like by putting forth the effort not to spoil it, that implies that the game has any redeeming merits that are worth not spoiling.
Oh, wow.
It is quite possibly the worst game I've ever played.
Is this like the geography of video games?
So wait, did you just say worst video game you've ever played?
Yes, I think maybe worst video game I've ever played.
Okay, so you know, roll call here. Who has played this game here?
I have not.
Okay.
I have.
You have, Dennis? Okay.
Yes.
I have as well. Wow. Okay, so lay out your case, David, because I'm very pro Stanley Parable, but that is very much just my opinion.
I think it basically came to me, the Stanley Parable is if you played Portal and said, like, hey, I really kind of like this narrative style and kind of way of telling a story, but I think what this needs is less gameplay and more pretension, then Stanley Parable is probably the game for you. Like, I thought it was, you know, very much a kind of, you know, think about it type of moment for me. I thought it was kind of dumb.
How could you not fall in love with that British accent? What about it? Did you find pretentious? I guess
just the whole thing. The game never went anywhere, and it took a lot of time to get there.
Going nowhere fast. I could see how somebody could read it as pretentious, and really, that kind of goes back to my misunderstanding of how anybody could see pretension as being a bad thing. Outside of the think about it kind of stance.
This was very much a think about it type of thing.
But like,
I think none of the things it seemed to be driving at, it just wasn't nearly as clever as it thought it was.
None of the paths resonated with you, because there were some of them that, like, you know, I've talked about crying at video games before, like, that got me like choked up, like at what they were trying to say. And I was kind of astonished at the emotional range that they were, the emotional and thematic range that they were able to explore with just, you know, kind of like looking at the same setting and these seemingly small and, you know, blatantly minor choices that you were making that would end up in these, you know, kind of like not lessons they were trying to teach, but just extremes that they were able to extrapolate to. Like none of the ways that this ended up actually spoke to you.
See, I think it was more to me, it just seemed like I would make a choice and say, oh yeah, that's great. Now we're gonna talk about the stuff we want to.
Oh, I didn't find that at all. And I wouldn't have said that it makes any. I didn't come away with anything like super deep or on the level that Cole did. But I just thought it was a really good example of like an incredibly clever idea. Like, hey, this paradox of like a narrator trying to narrate something he can't control, or, you know, maybe can, and just them really investing the time to play out all these different scenarios and be very clever with all the different ways that paradox could kind of play out. So I enjoyed it from that perspective, just the cleverness, apart from whether it did or did not make any great overarching statement at the end. Which, I mean, I don't know when you would exactly consider yourself at the end of that game, but like that's how I enjoyed it.
Yeah, the split that I understand, and just, you know, from having played both of these, and, you know, really really loving both of these games last year, you know, between Gone Home and the Stanley Parable, is that one is more, you know, textual and emotional in its appeal, right? Which is Gone Home. It lays out this case, and it, you know, really kind of like loads it up and makes kind of like more of an appeal for pathos for every character that's involved in that story. Mm-hmm. And Stanley Parable is more like metatextual and kind of like more intellectual in its appeal, which is, you know, just kind of like more, I hesitate to say this because Gone Home has like a tremendous amount of nuance to it, but like Stanley Parable is, you know, nuanced in a way that is kind of like a little bit more sterile and alien than Gone Home is.
See, I guess for me, like if it wants to do that, like if you've got a point, just come out and tell me. Like, I'm not going to dick around with your confusing, I don't know. To me, it just seemed like a game that didn't respect my time.
That's a very Western kind of theory on learning, that if you put the knowledge in my head once, then I've got it. If I can remember it on a test, then I understand it. Whereas a lot of the rest of the world, and I think there's a ton more value in this, kind of has the more Eastern idea of learning, where it's like, hey, you actually have to experience it multiple times from different angles, in what sometimes looks like repeating or not productive time, to really kind of understand it and digest it.
Yeah, the Rashomon I just don't think this really did that. I know. I got virtually nothing from it. I would say to me, and again, like, I can generally speaking see this as like different perspectives, but to me, anytime I say something positive about video games as art, I'm basically talking about the end effect of what Gone Home did, and anytime I say something negative about it, I'm basically talking about what Stanley Parable did. Like, it very much was distilled what those things that I think are dead ends in video games as art. So maybe it just wasn't for me.
Yeah, and like, so that makes perfect sense. Something absolutely can be not for you. I will say that you're the first person that I've heard who has reacted very positively to Gone Home, who has, you know, outright rejected the Stanley Parable, which kind of like establishes this dichotomy that I wasn't really aware existed before.
I would say for me, what I'm about to say, I'm obviously speaking in extremes in order to make a point, but I would say for me, it's sort of, I don't care about art, I care about storytelling.
Okay.
I don't think video games are actually a particularly good media for art. I think they're a good media for storytelling, and I think Gone Home was storytelling, whereas Stanley Parable was art, particularly modern art.
Do you think that if they tied the outcomes more to something kind of like concrete that you could telegraph from, you know, the different choice points, it would kind of resonate with you more? Because,
yes, I think it probably would, because a lot of it, and again, this could be, you know, my approach to it, I found its approach to, maybe this is some of it too, I found its kind of approach to storytelling, you know, kind of its thing, very frustrating. And maybe some of it was, I found the game very, very frustrating and unpleasant to play. And then, and in some ways I felt some of that with Gone Home, but whereas I felt like Stanley Parable, I think semi-objectively never exactly has a lot of payoff. And I say that semi-objectively because I think to a certain degree that's kind of some of the point. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not meant to have the same, like...
Yeah, there's no unifying, like, theme over this. Like you can say what Gone Home is about because, like, everything is concrete and constant between whatever interpretation you can put across. The evidence is there. Whereas in the Stanley Parable, the choice between, you know, between left and right can be the difference between... Hey, are you spending your time as well as you could, and are you ignoring your loved ones? Versus, like, what agency do you have over your continued existence on this plane?
Sure, and to be fair, that is not an angle on the game that I considered. I predominate, and again, this is probably me, like, the game as a gameplay didn't work for me. I viewed it predominantly as antagonistic.
Yeah, it does set the narrator against you. And, like, so what I'm seeing is, like, if more of the choices were set between, like, what the narrator wanted you to do and you disobeying him, I probably, like, my guess would be that this would actually be a more satisfying experience for you, as opposed to kind of some of the arbitrary stuff that happens around the margins.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So it's like, as it extends, like, if you deviate slightly from the plan, he gets a little bit annoyed, but then, you know, you roll with it and see where this ends up. Like, if it was more binary, this would probably have left you with a clearer statement on what it was trying to say.
Right. And the other thing, and again, this is totally just a me thing, and this kind of goes back to my I want to just tell me about it. Ultimately, if a game or something's making a point, I want it to at some point tell me what that point is so that I can analyze it and consider it and, you know, weigh it. And so I get frustrated when anything, this same reason I don't like satire, for this exact same reason. I don't like when people make points obliquely, because then you can't, it makes it difficult to ever directly analyze the point they're making. Which, again, that's probably, you know, a style of reasoning type thing, as opposed to merits of the game, whether it's good game or bad game.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
So interesting. In the long run, it was interesting playing it. I think if nothing else, just this, you know, and this is what, you know, a lot of, you know, reviews say, if nothing else, this is a good game to play just because of, like, you know, kind of what we've been talking about in terms of, you know, it's relevant to how video games can be told or what they can be.
It can only happen as a video game.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, this is relevant because I'm spending so much time now thinking about Dark Souls 2 and the way that treats narrative as opposed to, you know, Dark Souls 1 and games in general, which is a series of short stories that have varying, you know, widely disparate themes. More valuable or equally valuable, or can it be as good as one overarching, pointed, direct, relative to the fractured narrative, relatively simple thrust? Like, how do those relate to each other, and can you even compare them? In general, and that Stanley Parable Gone Home split is seeming more and more relevant as we start getting used to that style of storytelling. You know, sure. Versus, you know, really the only mechanic is what are you paying attention to, and mm-hmm. what are you choosing to make the thrust of your exploration of this space and these rules that the developer is setting in front of you?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry you didn't like it. Like, I hope that you took something away from it in terms of, you know, your ability to kind of interpret and appreciate games that tell, you know, stories in that style.
Definitely. It's also, you know, along with Portal, it's continuing my continual distrust of people with pleasing British accents.
Have you ever beaten Portal 2, David?
No, I need to go back and bite the bullet on that, because we've talked. I'm like, I'm in the home stretch on it. I mean,
have you gotten back to Wheatley's house?
No.
Okay. No. Yeah,
what decade are you in?
I went through old Portal, and then got back to, like, modern time, and then like I'm a reasonable way into then back to modern day in terms of, like, you know, it's starting to do some things with that, if that makes sense.
Ben, you were surprisingly okay with these kind of pseudo spoilers here. I haven't played it.
Wait, are you talking about Portal 2 or are you talking about
Portal 2?
Oh.
Oh, no.
Let's not put it back together. Ben, don't think about it too much. I don't want your mind to melt. I don't want you to yell at us for the things that we've said.
I was turning the volume down when during some of the Stanley Parable Gone Home discussion. Because, yeah.
Don't worry. I trust your judgment on that. Yeah, I'm probably due for a Portal 2 playthrough. Honestly, it's been about 3 years since that came out, and also I really just need to wait for whenever I have 18 hours to play because that game is too long.
Yeah, I tried beating that in a day one time. It was a long day. Whew.
Okay, so I kind of feel better hearing that because that's kind of been my like that. I mean that's kind of where I am is, you know, the game went too long and now I mean I should get back to it. I've just lost momentum, but I'm glad I'm not. It wasn't just me having no taste that kind of got a little burnout. So
you have taste. Everybody has taste.
Well.
Except for what's
can anything follow that well aside from you denigrating yourself?
Well, I was gonna say there's blind, there's deaf. What's that for taste?
Tongueless?
Maybe.
That's one way to do it.
I'm not making fun of the deaf, I'm making fun of the tongueless, okay? That's mostly people who've run afoul of the Yakuza. Yeah.
They don't deserve my sympathy.
Kick them while they're down.
Yeah. Oh, man, like they'd speak up. I'm sorry.
For the advocate of the deaf, you're awfully harsh towards the tongueless.
I'm an advocate for the blind, okay?
Okay.
He's a song for the deaf.
You have to pick. Yeah, exactly. Wow, what a weird.
Well,
like,
if you're tongueless, wouldn't you be... I'll be totally honest. What's the current politically correct term for not being able to speak?
Mute.
Okay, because the only thing I could think of was dumb, which I
wow.
assume
you
probably
like went
is
for the
not politically
exact
correct
wrong
anymore.
One.
Lost that coin flip.
Yeah. Man. So the mention of blind versus deaf made me think about the Rock Band episode of Watch Out for Fireballs, which came up for this guy's 3 hours of talking about music.
Yeah, I just saw Gary's post that, you know, early on you say, we're not going to talk about every song in the show, and then you proceed to talk about every song in the game.
That was all him. Saying, oh, we're not going to talk about every song.
I take issue with that statement. I don't know if I fully believe you were not a willing participant.
Oh, I was a willing... wait a minute. Okay. Expand upon that. I'm sorry.
That the drive of wanting to talk about everything was purely one-sided.
Okay. Okay. So I made the outline and it was there, but we were talking tier by tier. So even though I think that Celebrity Skin is not a great song, I'm going to talk about how unfun it is to play.
You don't think it's fun to play?
No, it's terrible. I hate it.
Not even on drums?
Nope.
Which podcast is this?
Listen to that one. I guess what I'm saying is it is one of our longer episodes of that.
No, I meant this one that we're recording. I've forgotten what we're doing here.
Dennis, I want you to tell me what you've been playing.
Sure. So Phil Holmes, awesome. Another awesome listener. We are chock full of awesome listeners this week. Thank you, everyone. Phil introduced me to the wonders of Rogue Legacy.
Hmm.
And that has basically dominated my life since I discovered it. So it's interesting playing that and Binding of Isaac at the same time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, on paper, they're both roguelikes.
Rogue-ish.
But they have very, very different strategies. So, for example, in Isaac, as long as you're doing relatively well, it behooves you to try to find every room before progressing in the game. Whereas in Rogue Legacy, if you want to progress in the game or beat a boss, it's best if you kind of just focus on that for that particular run.
Right.
And so what I found, like what I caught myself doing, you know, partway into Rogue Legacy was I wanted to do a boss run, but I was still kind of like just out of habit going and clearing every room in the area before confronting the boss, which is objectively a bad thing to do for
right.
Rogue Legacy.
Because movement is a limited resource.
Yeah. So it's just that sort of thing where it's like, wait a second, why am I doing Isaac?
Wait a minute. You don't beat the boss and then go explore everything else?
Well, I would go explore everything. Well,
Dennis answered the question.
Generally, I explore everything until I beat the boss, until you get to later levels in Isaac. Now I'm crossing the streams of these games. In Isaac, I will, in early levels, always explore everything because I'm looking for damage ups and, you know, good power ups before confronting the boss. Once I've gotten to a place I feel pretty confident, then I'm like, yeah, if I find the boss, I'm out.
Okay.
But in Rogue Legacy, you know, the boss is... it's best if you kind of get there because all your upgrading happens before the run. It's best if you just get there with as little interaction with anything but the boss as possible, as long as that's what you're going for.
Right. So that like that changes the equation, and that's like the biggest upset to the roguelike or roguish formula is the idea that your gold from your previous, let's say, ancestor. Yeah, relative carries over, and you have to spend that before you go back in. Kind of like changes the equation into something just that could possibly be construed as a little bit more grindy
for Rogue Legacy.
Yes.
I don't know.
It is. I mean, technically, it is.
Yes, but in practice, it's not grinding if you're enjoying it.
Yeah. Don't assume that I mean something bad when I say grindy.
Okay, yeah. So yes, like David said, technical definition, yeah, it's grinding the game.
I mean, the amount of time and effort that you expend can be directly rolled over into benefits for you,
I feel like the one thing that Dennis playing it inspired me to play it, so
that's why I'm talking. That's cool.
The one thing that is interesting though is you generally speaking, you only keep the loot from your most recent run,
right?
So you have to afford things all at once.
It's a Brewster's Million situation.
Say that again.
It's a Brewster's Million situation. You have to spend it all.
Sure. Yes. Right. Yes. So it still maintains, at least for me, the kind of the rogue thing of like, oh, this is a hot run, where just everything's going my way, because, you know, even if you're grinding on this run, you still have to get all that money all at once. So it seems, at least to me, that then makes it a little bit less, I'm just going to, you know, I have to kill 500 guys before my next whatever.
It's not I have to kill 500 guys. It's I have to kill 500 guys in a row.
Uh-huh.
Well,
and that somehow makes it. But yeah, it's a ton of fun, and I'm absolutely loving it. Beat the first boss. I'm partway through. I've gotten to the second a couple times. Almost had him on my first try, and I haven't gotten back to that point yet. But I'm absolutely loving it.
So have you found the generational differences and mutations to be like a really huge impact on the way you play?
Class-wise, it has to be.
Oh, for sure. But I'm talking more about like, oh, are you dyslexic versus do you have vertigo? Or are you endomorph versus ectomorph? Which, like, to me was the huge drawing factor to this. As, you know, since Cellar Door Games are the people who made Don't Shit Your Pants. I was like, oh yes, this seems in line with that thing, but like quickly for my playthroughs, that took a back seat and seemed more like a gimmick as opposed to kind of the class structure, which you just said makes a tremendous difference.
It's hard for any of those spell or those traits to outweigh the class. I would say if you get certain ones in certain combinations, it'll definitely shut you down. But in general, what I've been doing, I've been trying to stream it when I play it, and just I'll always throw it off to anyone watching. Hey, what should I pick? And kind of have the decision made for me, which has led to a couple vertigo runs, which are interesting.
Yeah, I would say like vertigo definitely matters. A couple of the more obtrusive vision ones matter. And the ones that affect your overall size matter.
Yeah, I'm fine playing as a dwarf most of the time. In fact, you can get extra places.
Oh, see, I cannot play as a dwarf.
And I cannot play as a giant, so that's interesting.
Yeah. And then the other one, there's a number of them that are very situational. So, like, the conducts electricity easily.
I don't know what that is. I still haven't taken that. I haven't worked up the courage.
Well, that one, apparently the only effect it has is the little, like, attack this platform to make it open for a couple seconds. It then just stays open as long as you're standing on it.
Oh, that's would actually be nice.
That's the only effect. Okay. I think my favorite, though, is you can get the one, in which case it replaces the loading message with jacking in, and then the dungeon, instead of looking like a dungeon, is all computery.
Yeah.
Does it have a green filter and have numbers everywhere?
Does not have that. If for some reason everything's purple, but still, like, that's literally the only effect.
Yeah, and the game has a great sense of humor about itself. Like, you know, your health pickups are little turkey legs, and you're reading these journal entries that you find. And one of them is like, you know, I've been wandering around this forest for days, but fortunately I found a food source. There were mushrooms along the ground, and they had chicken legs in them.
As they do.
Yeah.
It does kind of bother me from the storyline, though. Like, I just got the achievement for, you know, 20 lives, mm-hmm. or, you know, 20 deaths, whatever. If, you know, if we consider this is the Middle Ages, so let's say, you know, we don't have the same whatever we have now and people having kids when they're 12, that still means 250 years have passed since the start of this game. At what point does this become irrelevant and the king keels over from his injuries?
Yeah. Well, and I'm wondering if there's something more to it that we'll discover as we beat it. Yeah. I don't know if you've beat it before, but...
No, I have not.
I have not.
Yeah, so I will definitely be sinking more time into that. One last little story I'll share on Binding of Isaac. I had another, like, killer run where just all the upgrades came together, and it basically turned my guy into a one-button kill-everything-in-the-room guy. Like, just, you know, I had a splash damage, like, power-up, which just one time every room I could send out, you know, shots in every direction. But because my shots were laser shots, it just turned me into this whirling ball of death that killed everything. And so literally it was just one-shotting bosses, one after the other, really easily. I actually got, you know, through Mom's heart, and all the way to Satan, which I don't know how far that – I think that's the actual boss. Of the game, all the way to him, burst in the room, all excited, I'm gonna win, and use my power up on the statue before anything showed up in the room. So then I had to proceed to fight a boss and then fight Satan without my winning power up, and lost right at the end, and was so furious with myself.
Without probably having developed a muscle to actually fight him.
Right. I didn't need to do any better, so I hadn't been practicing actually fighting things with my build. God. So yeah, that's the furthest I've gotten, and it was just one of those real, like, you know, I'm glad that I got to experience that, and it's just, you know, everything came together in the perfect way, and it was really interesting. So yeah, nice. That's I'm very roguish right now.
No, for sure. It is a good genre.
Yeah, I'm enjoying all the entries that I'm exploring in it. Nice. So
next step, NetHack.
Oh God.
Are there any final questions for Dennis? Okay, Ben, can we button it up?
Yes.
The credit. So that was level number 89.
Getting up there.
Yeah, no, right? Approaching 100. What are we going to do, you guys?
We should figure out where that is on the calendar and actually plan something.
Yeah, we probably should.
Plan something.
What? Heresy. Let's burn this witch. Oh, Dennis, when you were talking about Rogue Legacy, you were talking about streaming and throwing things off to the participants. What is your Twitch username?
GreenLaser73. So that's GreenLaser, GrenLaser. You wouldn't believe the number of people who spell it with a Z. And then the number is 73.
Yeah.
And if you follow me on Twitter, I tweet very frequently and obnoxiously about my streams on Twitter. So follow me there and you'll find my channel. Yeah. I guarantee it.
I'm thinking about for 2015 making streams more of a part of the network. Because Ben, you're able to stream now too, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm a streamer.
David, you could probably figure it out, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I can probably press the big button on the controller marked share.
Okay, cool. You know, I didn't want to, you know. Yeah.
I've gone to college, all right?
I'm an adult.
Oh, man. Use all them college words. Goddamn right, I'll be heard. Yeah.
What do you think about the new album?
I honestly haven't heard it. What? Is there a new Modest Mouse album?
Yeah, they have new singles, I think, on the radio.
New singles? Wow. I'm really excited about that. I fucking love Modest Mouse. Yeah, thanks to you.
That's I can play their songs on guitar because that's what I was listening to when I learned guitar.
Nice.
And I can play Amelie on piano because that's what I was listening to when I learned piano.
Yeah. No. So why don't we all, like, right now share our Twitch usernames if we have them?
You just got mine.
You just got yours, Ben.
It's Merkilbee, but it might be Merkill. Merkill.
Okay.
Anytime I have an internet name, I have to strike fear in other people. So.
Yes. Yes. And I am Duckfeed TV. Yes. David?
And I am Johnny Power Up.
Cool. Yeah. So I'm thinking about starting, I need to find the right day. I'm thinking Saturdays, but because of the holidays, my Saturdays have been crazy. I want to start Saturday morning breakfast with Cole. and just pick a game and stream it for like 2 or 3 hours, something like that. So
Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah.
and fair warning on my feed, I just as often as not will just throw it on because I don't mind people watching me play regardless, but it means you might be either not having me on the mic or listening to me chat about random shit with my wife. So, you know, you might get a slice of life if you're watching. I'm not a very serious
baby
streamer.
Plays Hitman.
Baby plays Hitman.
I honestly thought
baby cries while Dennis plays Hitman.
I honestly thought you said baby Hitler. So I guess in that regard, if you care about us streaming and stuff, let us know, because Dennis has gotten a great response. I have tremendous performance anxiety, but I would like to make that part of a thing that the network does, you know, just because it is a thing that people have said they want. So let us know. And yeah.
Cool.
But in general, you know, the usual stuff applies. We have the Patreon, we have the Facebook, we have the iTunes ratings and reviews, and you can find all of those via the duckfeed.tv site. I don't want to keep you for too much longer because you've been so generous with your time so far. Is there anything I'm missing, you guys?
I don't think
happy so. 2015.
Yes, happy 2015, and tell your friends if they like video game stuff. You know, we are general interest. We are wide in the net we cast, and we welcome anybody and everybody who wants to, you know, throw in.
Yeah.
Cool. So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter. That's KOLEROSS.
Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter, DFURIA.
I'm David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on Twitter. That's MoneySmith 777.
Yeah, but how do you spell seven? All right. I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter. I'm not going to spell it.
As well you shouldn't. I'm really just kind of like reveling in this power trip that I have, that however I start that final cascade, everybody follows. Aside from Ben, but Ben's his own person.
That's right.
He's not a sheeple. A Sherpin?
I've been to college.
A Sherpin. A Sherpin. Oh, man. If it wasn't too late to pick a title, then I would totally make that
title.
Yeah,
there's no good singular form of sheeple. Sherpin.
It sounds like shart. So anyway, I recommend everybody watches/reads Koi Anaskasi Shrugged, and by that I mean KOYAANISQATSI space. Delay. S-R-S-H-R-U-G-G-E-D.
Kratos Gutsy is surprising. Well, maybe it's not surprising, but it's hard to spell.
That's the least. Ben, the fact that Koyana Skotsky is hard to spell is the least surprising fact about Koyana Skotsky.
Yeah.
So, okay, so real talk between all of you. How many of you knew what I was talking about when I said Koyana Skotsky?
I still don't know what you're talking about. Because I couldn't spell him to Google him.